it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
I'm bringing hassle back.
Yeah. Get your sexy on.
We are hour number three on this rainy Wednesday. Darren, Donick, and Chase. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. We're bringing our man Tim Hasselbeck every Wednesday at this time. He's brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Tim, it looks like the next opponent for the Titans is the Cincinnati Bengals, and they have shipped formerly number 96, Carlos Dunlap, to Seattle for an offensive lineman and a seventh-round pick. This thing with Carlos Dunlap escalated in a hurry thanks to social media and other things. But, man, it was an ugly scene. 12 snaps he was involved in the loss to Cleveland on Sunday. Got into it with the D.C. after the final touchdown. Had to be broken up by players and coaches. What do you make of that move?
I think when a player goes on social media – saying that, like, hey, Zach's plan's good for Zach, but it's not good for me. I think that can probably get you a ticket, out of town. I think that's what that means. And like, I think everybody knows Cincinnati's kind of in a situation where they're rebuilding. Dunlap's been in the league for a while. He's been a good player, has a good career, and older players aren't always looking for an opportunity to be part of a rebuilding plan, especially if, they kind of see their years and earning potential winding down. So not surprised by it. I think it's probably the right move rather than, having people around that don't want to be part of, the building blocks of the future to just go ahead and move on.
Threw out a stat earlier, and this was pretty amazing because we were talking about this shortly after the trade had happened. Do you realize that's only the second in-season trade the Bengals have ever made in their franchise's history?
I didn't know that, but, I mean, obviously they are really – they're not super active or haven't been traditionally as an organization.
Do you know who the other one is? Somebody who played your position.
Yeah, so Carson Palmer, was he holding out? When did that trade happen?
Yeah, it was the Carson Palmer trade in 2012 to the Raiders. That's the only two trades they've ever made in season in their franchise's history.
Well, and think about that Carson Palmer situation. He basically was like, yeah, I'm retired.
Yeah, right. Right.
So, it's not like they're actively looking for deals. They have moved guys in season when guys have been essentially refusing to play for them be a good player for them from the standpoint of being a teammate and that stuff. So, yeah, I don't know that it has a big effect on that football team. I think that football team is fine in its way. I think they've done some good things. It's pro football, so they'll be competitive, but look, that's not one of the better teams in the NFL right now, with or without Carlos Dunlap.
Chase can no longer talk about this team on the show, so I will ask it for him. Yesterday, Cowboys trade Everson Griffin to Detroit. Now word coming out of Big D is they have told Dontario Poe, who's their big defensive tackle, and cornerback Darrell Worley, that they will be released if not traded today. What is going on down there?
Wow. Yeah, well, the season hasn't worked out the way they planned, and and so I think that moving people probably makes sense. But they kind of were going all in a sense with Dak Prescott, right? Like, they felt like they had an offensive line. They felt like they had the quarterback. They got better receivers. I think they felt like they were okay at the tight end position. Defensively, whether it was Alden Smith or Griffin or, players like that, I think they felt like, those guys were going to help them. Sean Lee being healthy was a thing. They signed deals to guys like Jalen Smith and I think they just felt like they were close. I think they were a team that thought they was going to win their division. And now with how their season has gone, look, it's crazy to say it in October, but it's not happening this year for them. And so with that, you kind of start to figure out how you can make, you know, things happen to set yourself up for more success in future seasons.
Amazing, considering the status of that division. But
here's the thing I would say about that, and I've done a couple of breakdowns on it on SportsCenter. The lack of effort on the defensive side of the ball is alarming. And, like, I just don't feel like that should happen in pro football. I don't. Like, you know, I mean, there's plenty of guys on bad teams that, you know, continue to give great effort throughout the season. Guys that are playing under big contracts and stuff, and you're not seeing that there. And, you know, I don't know why that is, but that's a problem.
The Texans have closed their facility today after players have been testing positive for COVID-19. The big trade was earlier in the week was down in Tampa, where they do land wide receiver Antonio Brown. The Bucs, Tim, have scored more points than anybody else in the league to this point. Now you add him to the mix with Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, Scotty Miller.
Godwin is hurt.
Godwin's out, but from what I could tell, it looks like it's this week, and he may be back sooner rather than later. It's a broken finger in the touchdown catch on Sunday. I mean, they're loaded with weapons on offense. So, one, what do you make of the move? And, two, how in the world can you keep everybody happy on that side of the ball?
Well, I think you keep people happy on that side of the ball if, you know, some of those players are unselfish. I mean, I just, you know, think about how Gronk wasn't getting the ball early in the year. Like, it didn't seem like Gronk was upset about it. I mean, and so being unselfish allows for, you know, some guys to have good weeks, you know, 1 week, and other guys to have a good week, you know, the next. So I think that ends up being, you know, how you end up keeping people happy, because there is not, you know, enough to go around for everyone to be happy every single week. So, you know, that's what has to happen. And then in terms of Antonio Brown, I don't know. I mean, I think you have to hope that the relationship with Brady has an influence on his behavior. I think you have to hope that being out of the game and not collecting paychecks has, you know, created a new perspective in terms of being happy and thankful for the opportunity. And I think it's what you have to hope for. And, you know, I think if it doesn't, then you cut them, which is essentially what they've already threatened to do. So I think that's how that works. I think the bigger thing, and I think this is the case prior to Antonio Brown, if they protect Brady, they're going to be fine on offense. If they can protect him, they will be fine. And I think when you add good players at the receiver position, Antonio Brown being one of them, that, you know, if those guys win, then the quarterback can get rid of the football. So protecting the quarterback is in part quarterback getting rid of it quickly and the offensive line protecting and guys getting open quickly and all of that stuff. So I think it helps in that regard.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. And, Tim, the AFC East really intrigues me. You've got New England at Buffalo this week. Buffalo has got a 5-2 record, but they have been outscored cumulatively for the season. And New England looked so bad last week. You got Miami at 3-3, and then changing quarterbacks. So, what do you think we're going to see from New England? Let's start there. As they go to Buffalo, this would seem to be a really important game. If they're going to make a move in the division, they've got to look good on Sunday.
Yeah, I think so. Look, I'm expecting New England to get better. The quarterback has not played well. Obviously, you know, kind of been through it with COVID and that stuff. But he's been a better player throughout his career. He can play better. He's been really bad the last 2 weeks. He just needs to find ways to make, you know, make better plays in the passing game. I mean, he has guys open and he's not hitting them. That's a problem you know, I don't care if you've won an MVP before or not. So I would think that he'll play better than he has the past 2 weeks. If he doesn't, I could see them making a change. I mean, that's kind of how I feel, where I feel like they are. I think it's too early for a change, but I could see a change happening this season if he doesn't start playing better. Look, I think the Bills are a good football team, and they're not perfect, and you know, but I think that because their quarterback's a unique enough player to defend and they're well coached, I think they've kind of got a good culture on their football team from Sean McDermott. I thought that New England would win the division prior to the season, and as we sit currently, I think it's a much better, you know, much more likelihood that it's Buffalo that wins it than New England.
You've got Miami as well making a quarterback change. What is their upside at this point? Where do they figure into this, and what are you expecting from Tua?
I think, look, Tua came from a program that prepared him to play in the NFL. So I don't expect him to look lost. I really don't. And I think that had he been healthy, there would have been some legitimate debate over whether it should be Tua or Joe Burrow as the number one overall pick. And Burrow's played, and he's been fine. In fact, he's had some really good moments. So I think there'll be good moments for Tua. I think there'll be bad moments for him because it's not a great team. You know, he's a young player, and so I think that'll happen. Look, with the way Fitz is playing, and you guys have watched Fitz, and you've seen, like, there are times where you're like, oh, wait a second. Like, this is why they call him Fitz Magic. Like, this is good, and the team likes him, and, you know, players like him, and they're kind of rallying around him. I mean, that's – everywhere he's been, there's been glimpses of that. And so, you know, the beginning part of this season – he's been pretty good, and people have rallied around him. I think guys like him. And so I actually think that this ends up being an immediate downgrade at the position, even if it's better, you know, at the end of this year or obviously in years, you know, down the road here. But I think it's an immediate downgrade at the position. So, you know, I'm not sure that I really feel like they're in the mix for the division at this point.
Yeah, that'll be interesting with the extra wild card out there where they could end up, because you feel like maybe they could be on the bubble. So all that in the context of the Titans trying to get back on track against a Cincinnati team that on paper this is a game that you've got to win. Assess, you mentioned it, Burrow has shown some really good ability. And what I hear a lot, Tim, is that he's doing really well in spite of just horrendous offensive line play. So tell me what you're seeing there.
Yeah, they have not protected him well. But, anyone who watched him in college knows – he's a really good athlete. He's kind of got this slippery sense to him in terms of escaping. And he does a really good job of creating offense on his own. It was definitely a strength of his in college. I think he kind of plays more athletic than, you know, anybody thinks that he is, right? And so there's been some of that. I think I maybe mentioned this to you guys. If it wasn't to you guys, it, you know, has come up at some point this season. I think he's kind of played well in some of these critical moments. They found themselves in tight games where he's putting together a two-minute drive, and he gives them a chance, whether you know, he throws a touchdown pass to A.J. Green that gets called back for offensive pass interference, or he gives them an opportunity to kick a field goal by marching them down the field and they don't hit it. So I actually think in some of these critical moments, he's played some of his best football. So, look, I think they should be excited about some of the things that have happened for him. It hasn't been perfect. He's had some of those kind of typical rookie mistakes where you're like, why would he throw it there? But I think ultimately, like if you were looking at it saying with how this offseason went and, hey, you're the week one starter on not a very good football team, he's made them much more competitive than I think a lot of people thought they would be.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us from ESPN, presented by Red Spirits and Wine. So after the Steelers win against the Titans on Sunday, did your feelings about Pittsburgh change at all, or are they pretty much the same?
Well, I mean, I think they're the same. I don't know if I've kind of been on record ever since Kevin Colbert the Steelers GM, said at the combine that he actually thinks that Ben is going to be better than he was in recent years. Those are his comments at the combine. And my position on the Steelers from that point has been, if he's telling the truth and he knows about Ben's surgery and rehab, if he's telling the truth, then that is a Super Bowl contending team. Like, that's, they're that fast and good on defense. They've got a very good offensive line. They're well coached. They went 8-8 with horrible quarterback play a year ago. To me, if Ben is going to play at like a typical Ben level or an above average Ben level, they're a Super Bowl contending team. And I think that's what they are, because Ben looks right. You know, Ben made a few plays in this past weekend's game where it's like, yep, that's Ben. Whether it was kind of breaking a tackle in the pocket and, you know, shuffling the ball out in front of him, or, you know, a throw down the field. Like, I think, or, you know, the Titans coming after him, him seeing it, getting the ball out quickly to those fast receivers that are good run after the catch guys. Like, they are a Super Bowl caliber team. So in that sense, no, it hasn't changed, because I think that's what they are.
When you watch the Titans, and something that we've talked about really not just the last 3 days since the loss, but for a long time, the pass rush continues to be an issue with the Titans. They almost get to the quarterback, but almost sacks, that's not a stat, doesn't count. So what is it that you see that you think they could potentially change with the personnel that they have, or do they is it a scheme issue, or do they just need to go out and get somebody else to help with the pass rush? What do you see?
Yeah, I don't think it's a scheme issue. I think it's like, look, guys have to, you know, ultimately win matchups. And I will say this in kind of, you know, defense of their pass rush, especially from this past week. There were a couple of times where, like, Tennessee's coming after them. And not only coming after, like from a scheme perspective, like, they're coming after them in a way where, like, they have an unblocked defender, you know, that's probably going to get home and get a sack if the quarterback doesn't get rid of the ball quickly. And I think that's kind of what I was saying about Ben. Like, if you look at the second, there was a big third down play to Deontay Johnson, and then the touchdown where kind of looks like he's running the slant, catches it and spins out of it for a first down, or for a touchdown. Like, they're coming after Ben there, you know, it's kind of like zero, right, zero blitz look coming after him. But Ben beats it. So, look, I think when you play quarterbacks that get rid of the football, you need to find ways to just beat the man in front of you. And by beating the man in front of you, you now are playing coverage, which means you're holding on to the football a little bit longer to read the defense, and then you're getting home for the sack. So, yeah, I actually think that the Steelers did a good job picking stuff up. They were moving Clowney around before he kind of got banged up in that game. You know, he, to me, is the guy that – you need to try to find opportunities for him to get a true one-on-one and win. And I think Landry's got the ability to do that as well. But, yeah, I mean, that's, I think, what you're really looking for.
So how much, in another conversation that we've had, because I've been saying that I think when you see the secondary improve, when Adoree Jackson is back and you have Christian Fulton healthy and, you know, continuing to grow into his role, once you have those pieces in place, that the secondary is going to help some of the pass rush. Do you buy that, or do you think it's the other way around?
No, I mean, I do buy that. I mean, they definitely go hand in hand, but what I would say is, it's hard for anybody, Adoree Jackson or not, like, it's hard for anybody when you're playing with coverage and you're not getting help, right? Like, it's man-to-man with no help because you're heating somebody up to try to generate pressure. And so I think that you need – I think it's more about the pass rush than it is about the coverage, you know, at this point. I mean, that's how I would see it. Because, look, I think when you can get home without bringing extra people – you just are preventing opportunities from big plays happening in the passing game. Like, just, you have more defenders down the field. You have less people running, you know, running towards the quarterback. So, to me, that ends up being the bigger challenge. And that's why I think you need guys to win one-on-ones. And, And I think kind of to your earlier point, like, I don't know that there's been enough of that.
Right. Sunday night, we saw a fantastic matchup between the Cardinals and the Seahawks. And I know the comparisons were made between Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson. You know, that they're similar in size, both played baseball. You know, the biggest difference is where they were drafted. But we've seen Russell evolve his game being a smaller guy, and that's how he's been able to play at the level that he has. So what are some things that Kyler needs to take away from watching Russell to be able to have the same type of career?
Well, I will say this about Russell. I thought Russell early in his career like would have opportunities to play on time from inside the pocket, and he would turn it down. And it was, you know, so he was really careful with the football. So much so in a way where you thought, well, I mean, he could have made that throw. I think there was an element of that, you know, maybe I was critical of that, you know, maybe wasn't fair because he's still been so good at playing from the pocket and not turning the football over. You know, he's been an amazing deep ball thrower. Like that's something that Kyler and everybody can probably learn from is, you know, his ability as a deep ball thrower in terms of accuracy, giving guys a chance. You know, he's been as good as anybody. I think in terms of Kyler, like throwing lanes, like in terms of like stuff being like same size, things like that, I think Kyler Murray does a really good job of finding throwing lanes and being smart with the football in that regard. So, you know, I don't know. I see them as kind of different players. I think Kyler Murray is actually, you know, one of these guys that really is a pocket passer. He was really good at it in college. He, I think, is really good at it now. I think because he has that other element of a runner, that he's seen as like this just creator of offense, and I don't really see him that way. I think he is best either if he is just running it as a runner or if he's throwing it from a clean pocket. Like that, to me, are the things that he does best right now.
Last thing, Monday night, Brian Griese on the broadcast talking about Nick Foles and Matt Nagy. You've been a part of those meetings, those pre, you know, game meetings where you're going to be in the broadcast booth and you get to have those one-on-one conversations. Was that supposed to get out there? Was Brian Griese supposed to tell that on the air, or how do those meetings work behind the scenes?
What part of what he said has got you?
I'd have to go back and see. He was talking about sometimes Matt doesn't see things. He calls things, and I know right then I'm not going to have enough time to make that play happen. Something to that. I'm paraphrasing. That's
yeah. So. I think typically speaking, and, you know, unless you say like, hey, you know, don't repeat this on air, you know, as a player or a coach, you have to assume that, you know, that it has a chance to be, you know, to make air, kind of like a, you know, a hot mic, right? You guys walk into the studio, I mean, you kind of have to anticipate that there's a chance that it's making air. So I think there is traditionally like a caution. There is also a trust level too. And look, I know that like coaches have said stuff to us. Just take COVID, for example. Coaches have said stuff to us about what's going on campus with COVID and things like that, that, you know, I think they're trying to give us perspective, not trying to give us something to put on air. Right?
Okay.
And I think that, you know, there probably is usually, you know, sometimes it's like an unspoken understanding of what the context of it was. And so, listen, Brian's been calling games a long time. You know, you can't do this a long time if you are constantly burning bridges. And so I would guess that it was said in the context of probably not trying to be critical of Matt Nagy, but just explaining the mindset of Nick Foles. You know, when he gets a certain call, maybe what's going through his mind, you know, based on how the game is going.
Okay.
You know, I would kind of chalk it up to that.
I think Nick was asked about it after the game, and I think it kind of took him off guard because obviously a lot of people caught that on the broadcast, and I think he kind of was taken back by
it. Yeah, and I think the thing – well, listen, I mean, look, he's a friend of mine, and I've had conversations with him about stuff that you know, I wouldn't say on air, and he's never said, like, hey, don't say this on air, you know? I just was like, yeah, that's probably not for air. You know, it's just and look, I'm not saying that can't happen. I know this, too, and not to speak specifically to that situation. There are plenty of times where, as a broadcaster, you maybe are talking about something that somebody has said to you, and you think, well, there's nothing harmful about this. And then the player or the coach is upset about it, like, hey, how could you say that? And you're like, wait a second, I thought I was actually, like, paying you a compliment. You were offended by that? Or, you know, players are generally way more sensitive than most people think. So, yeah.
Interesting. Hey, good stuff as always. Hey, appreciate it.
Hey, wait, by the way, no Sporting Clay follow-up this week? Nothing? Like,
no, we didn't.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't do.
What?
But you did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Wait a second. So what was the over-under? 100 shots.
Oh, wait a minute.
I thought it was 100.
I thought it was 25. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but we shot 100.
Shot 100.
So.
Shot
listen,
100?
If I could choose my best 25, if we could, I got a really big bruise.
How's your shoulder? I was going to say, how's your shoulder? 100
not
shots.
Great. Not great. Because I probably didn't hold it properly. Not great.
Let's go. 49 and a half.
I say over.
Over.
I'll go 60.
That was a terrible line.
62.
That was a terrible line.
You know what? I think you hit 70%.
Okay.
What was your number?
72.
Really?
Okay. My man.
All right.
Hey, listen.
Just so you know,
like, I actually was like, okay, yeah, like, I've never been so happy for a C- in my life. And I was like, okay, yeah, like, here we go. And I thought it was pretty good. But then, Steve Hutchinson was at, like, 85. And he it was just okay. Yeah.
How did Hal do?
I'm dying to know. I regret a little bit saying my number. I'm dying to, because we need to get an honest number from Hal.
All right, we will investigate.
Is Fisher like 90 or better? Is he like close to 100?
You know, I don't know. I don't know his exact number, but yeah, if he was in the 90s, I wouldn't be shocked.
Where did this increase to 100? I thought we were on the premise of 25.
No, well, it's what I'm saying. Normally, like if you go, 100's a lot of shots.
Yeah,
but I will say it's like it kind of increases the sample size enough that it's much harder to hide.
Were you pleased with that? Were you happy or were you disappointed?
With 72?
Yeah.
Oh, I will say with 72.
You're not answering.
I was not upset. Okay. I will say this. This is the worst. This is the worst. So my brother shot as well. And at the end of it, I can't believe I'm admitting this. At the end of it, he's like, what'd you shoot? I was like, 72. And he shows me his card. What do you think he shot?
72.
87?
Hey, 73.
Oh, no.
Okay. I have the number from Hal.
And listen, I'm still not emotionally over that, by the way. Do you have the number from Hal?
I have the number.
Actually, I just – okay, what is it?
69.
Nice.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay. So you beat Hal
Gill. Chris Mason was there. Chris Mason was there. Do we know how he did?
We'll investigate.
We'll have to get his
we're
name.
Investigating.
Hey, that was actually a rhetorical question because I know what he got. Guess what he got?
70. Oh, no. So we beat Hal by one, lost two to you.
He's got bragging rights. He's got bragging rights.
Wow. Okay. This is good info. I wouldn't have thought Skillsy was going to finish last. That's interesting. Man.
Yeah.
So your brother got you by one.
Yeah, he did. But the bigger story is now Hal has to refer to Steve Hutchinson as Mr. Hutchinson for the rest of the year.
Yeah. I was going to follow up with what was their bet. And now we know.
I don't.
And let me tell you,
I made that up. Okay.
As you know, if that bet really did happen, Steve would absolutely enforce that bet. Like, Hal would have to do that every single time.
Oh,
that's
dude.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
All right, Tim. Thanks. Have a good rest of your week.
Fellas. Good to talk to you. See ya.
All right.
Bye.
That is Tim Hasselbeck every Wednesday starting at noon, and that is brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. You know what? I want to talk to you about DraftKings because it's live here in Tennessee with mobile sports betting. And, man, can you imagine if they would have been up on Tuesday? Yes, that would be yesterday, right? This is Wednesday. I'm losing track of this week. And they would have had the numbers for Skillsy and C-Mace and Tim and Matt Hasselbeck. Oh, and you could bet on that? Oh, that would have been good. Yes, that's DraftKings. You may know them as the leading fantasy brand, but they've also taken their passion for sports and developed it into America's top-rated sportsbook app. And this isn't some offshore operation. Like a lot of gambling sites, DraftKings is right here. They're a legitimate sportsbook in the U.S. With DraftKings Sportsbook app, you can bet wherever, whenever, and you don't even have to leave your house. Just download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code 1025GAME. And that's when you sign up. For a limited time, new users will get a deposit bonus up to $1,000. That code, 1025GAME. Get your deposit bonus up to $1,000 only at DraftKings Sportsbook app. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Deposit requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.